It's time to talk some Blues hockey. Welcome to the Blues NHL podcast, hosted by former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers and former Blues enforcer Darren Kimball.
And we got a problem in front of the Hawk bench. Kimball pulling at Roenick. Here's Kimball swinging at Roenick wildly, and the linesman trying to get in between him.
Look at Radek. He dropped the gloves with Rivers. The referee or the linesman should jump in here. You can't let a guy like Rivers continue to throw punches.
Federico stolen from Reinhardt. Breaking in to Hunter. Hunter shooting. Rebound. Recognizer scores!
Here comes Chevalier. He'll be thrown out of the game. Curtis Joseph grabs Chevalier, and the two goalies go at it. Head to head. And Joseph with three great right.
Turgeon to Hall, looking for 500. He shoots, he scores! Brett Hall, number 500.
Tarasenko, in the clear, he scores! Get up, St. Louis. Get on your feet. They did it. It's over. The game is over. The series is over. The wait is over. And the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions for the first time in franchise history.
Hello, Blues fans, and welcome to a quarantined edition of your Blues NHL podcast. I'm your off-ice official, Jim Cromer, coming to you from the SynergyHockeySkills.com studios. SynergyHockeySkills.com hopefully will be firing some stuff up here. I don't know what the rules are, but we're going to hear it right from the horse's mouth here, literally, not too distant future. Want to thank them for that. Yeah, there it is, a little nay nay in the background. But hey, won't be long. We'll have both the boys on here. But want to thank you guys for coming back with us here as we had some calls to come on and just kind of break the monotony and give people some hockey talk. So we will do that. Let's welcome in the real talent of the show. Let's start with, you know, he gets on my partner's case about the size of his head, but the way things are going in the radio world for this guy, I don't know if his head will fit through the door the next time we can all be in the same room. Let's welcome in Jamie Rivers. What's going on?
Gentlemen, how are we doing?
And the real big head, Mr. Kimball, what's going on?
Easy there, Slick. Easy.
Yeah, so.
Kimby, I got a question for Kimby right off the
Okay,
hop.
All right.
Question.
Okay.
Kimby, are you wearing a mask around at all right now during these times?
Nope, because I know where you're going.
So well, I'm just wondering because I have an extra pillowcase that I could probably help you out with.
Oh, jeez.
That's right. Hey, that's the good thing about the quarantine. I've been staying away from ribs too. It's quarantine, and I stay away from them.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how this is working out. Now, the rumors are that this ribs in quarantine somehow is in the best shape of his life. And I've seemed to have found all 30 pounds he's probably lost. I'm trying to figure out how this works, Kimby. I don't understand it.
I could go there, but we're not rated R here. We've got to slow down there. So.
Oh, geez, Louise.
You know what? I started trying to eat better, and not like some crazy diet or anything like that. Just trying to eat a little better. I cut the Red Bull out of my life. It doesn't exist anymore. You know, the alcohol's still around. We're not giving that up.
Hey, that's a couple $100 a month habit he kicked to the side. That's good.
Yeah. And then just started walking and running every day. And now it's funny as shit because they look in the studio like I'm half freaking crazy, which they're probably not too wrong. But every commercial break, when we go to break, I got these resistance bands that I bought. And so I'm doing like shoulder press, I'm doing curls, I'm doing shoulder raises, I'm doing all sorts of shit in there. And it's got me probably in the best shape I've been in since my last year of play.
I've got it figured out now.
Extracurricular activity.
Kimball, I got it figured out now. He's working out and I'm spending time in the drive-thru.
Yeah. You could use those bands for other things too.
I could use them for a lot of things, Timmy.
Oh boy. Well, somebody must be getting, you know what it is, Kimby. He saw that Mike Tyson is talking about doing a comeback and Rivs wants a piece, I guess.
You want nothing to do with that guy, the way he's punching.
Listen, I had this debate on the radio show. And, you know, first of all, I want to fight Shaq. Okay. I watched Shaq and his show and he was like rolling around on the ground, like pretending he's like some UFC guy. I'm like, you know what? I would fight Shaq tomorrow in the parking lot, but it's barroom rule. It's not like tippy tappy. So Shaq's my first victim. And then somebody brought up Mike Tyson. And of course, look, I'm not stepping in the ring with Mike Tyson, nor do I want to even go barroom brawl with Mike Tyson, because the dude can handle himself in every aspect of that. But here's the but. I said, put him on skates. Okay? You put Mike Tyson on skates, I'm fighting him every day of the week. Am I wrong, Kimby?
No, I totally agree with you on that. Totally agree.
Yeah, and believe it. Can you believe this shit? Some people were like, oh, give him, okay, that's fine. Give him 6 months to get used to skating. I'm like, give him fucking 6 years. I don't care. Fighting on skates is a whole other animal.
Hey, you know what?
I'm looking to get my face punched in by somebody.
If you would take, here's the prime example you could do, and I won't go with Tyson on this one, but I'll go with Shaquille O'Neal. Tell Shaquille O'Neal when he's sitting in the gym, tell him to take the two basketballs and stand on top of them and try to fight and see how he makes out with that, because that's what he'd be doing on the ice.
There you go. See? I knew you'd have my back, Kimby.
Hey, you guys probably couldn't be more right, but doesn't a guy like Mike Tyson look at both of you and go, sooner or later, you got to take them skates off?
Yeah, but it won't be any time when he's around.
Hey, Kimby, I know, Kimby, you obviously saw it. Did you guys see the video of this guy punching right now?
Yeah, you know what, though? I'll tell you what, and I'm a huge fan of the guy. I think the guy next to Muhammad Ali, he was like, I just love to watch the guy. And, you know, what Muhammad Ali did in his career was amazing, how he fought those big guys and the strategy he used. But Tyson, he was just phenomenal when Custom Auto was around. And when I'm watching him there, everything's fine and dandy and you're doing all that stuff. But, you know, the guys that he would be fighting, those big guys that now – they're probably growing another foot since Mike's been back and was in the ring back 15 years ago. And I would like to see him come back and be successful at whatever he does in this, because I just love the way he boxed. But this Tyson Fury and these guys, they're so friggin' big, man. I tell you what, I don't even think Mike would – taking a punch and trying to throw him is a totally different animal going on there. You know what I mean? So it would be tough.
Yeah, look, I agree with you, Kimby, and we actually had this discussion today on the show, and I said the same thing. I'm like, listen, Tyson could come back today, which, you know, he says he's back, so what that means I don't know, okay, but he could come back today and probably get up into the top 5 or 6 guys in the heavyweight division. The problem is the top dogs, the 1, 2, and 3 guys, like you're talking about Tyson Fury, he's 6'8", and you know, he's in the, I don't know if he's in the prime of his career, but he's fighting enough to be regular, and he's in good shape, and he's gone a lot of rounds. And I think that that's where Tyson would lose, is that even though at 53 he's throwing fucking bombs out there, he's not in 35-year-old shape or 36-year-old shape.
I do. Rez, you know what I compare it to, and when I was thinking about it, it would be back in, and you could, I could even ask, and I know Twister, you know how tough he was, and, you know, it was a different animal, Twister was. But even when Twister was going near the end of his career, when he was going, and guys like George LaRocque and the Boogeyman and all these guys, they come around, guys just started getting bigger, man. Like, I'm telling you, when I was fighting guys, Stu Grimson was pretty big, but, you know, 6'3", 6'4". And then I was looking at guys at the end when, like, the Twister was near the end and all that. Guys, it was LaRocque and these guys, they're like 6'7", 6'8". And I'm Boogeyman, he's huge. And I'm going, wow, it's just a different animal, man.
Yeah, you know, you got guys at the end, they're like, even Eric Cairns was 6'7". Mm-hmm. Zdeno Chara, not a fighter, but still 6'9". John Scott, 6'8". Boogeyman, 6'7". Like, yeah, the guys are getting big. And I think that would be the biggest problem for Mike is being quick enough at his age to get inside on those big guys and do the damage that he has to do. But I'll tell you what, there's a number of fucking guys in that heavyweight division that end up spitting teeth all over the goddamn ring when they fight him.
Yeah.
What a mess, what a mess. Well, listen, you know, thought we'd at least, obviously we have no games to talk about, but when it comes to hockey and the Blues, Rivs, you've probably been asked this 100 times, Kimby, probably more so with you, like your thoughts on if they were to do something. But I mean, is there anything, I'll start with you, Kimby, is there anything in your mind at all that leads you to believe that they can start this thing back up and finish it?
I think they can. I wish they would, and the country's got to get going here. And I know people are saying, yeah, you got this. And I understand all that, but there's a lot of people out there in the world that, you know, you just got to, that a lot depend on a lot of other things, and sports revenues. And I know they'll come back slowly, but it creates a lot of jobs for people out there, and it gets people working. That's the biggest thing for me. As far as the hockey goes, I watched this weekend, I watched the UFC fighting going on, and I think if they're going to do it, and this is just my opinion, and I, you know, because I want them to come back and finish this out, because I hate to see a big asterisk beside somebody in the thing that they couldn't finish the season. But I would, like the UFC, like Dana White, and I know he's trying to get out in front of there because he's sort of friends with the president and all this stuff, but they do testing before, and they caught a guy that didn't do it, and they found a way around it. You know, that would be the hardest thing for them if they were doing testing and you run into a team that, say, and I'll just use, for example, I'll use just say Pittsburgh, because say you got Crosby and these guys, all of a sudden they're making a run for it, and all of a sudden, just for example, they tested positive. What would you do then? Is there something in there that says, boom, we just got to take it off and we got to continue on? Or, you know, that would be my biggest thing, because when this all went down, remember, guys, the two basketball players come out, and they on the same team, I believe. And then that's basically when everything just got shut down and in the sports world. And I like the idea of testing, getting to the process to make sure everyone's okay. Once they're in the rink, I'd be fine with it. Just go ahead and play the game. But because I just don't know if you can get to, if something happens to someone or a whole team gets decimated, like get it all. You never know what's going to happen there.
Yeah. So here's where I'm at on it is I think that, as we get closer, I think the ideas are getting worse. And let me explain, okay? Because when we started out, you know, we talked about having hub cities where they would house however many teams. Like they thought, there was talk of St. Louis being a hub city to where the entire Central Division would play out of St. Louis. And I just think that the concept of that is better than what they're talking about now, to where teams would go back to their home facilities and then travel to and from their games. I just don't think that that's the easiest way to keep all of this organized. And I don't know shit about the coronavirus. I don't know shit about anything to do with the medical side of it. I do know that as of right now, they don't have a way to fix it. Okay. And I've been keeping the players and their staff basically in a bubble, you know, quarantine in one small area, to where once these players, if they're all healthy, then they can stay healthy. I worry about outside entities, and where a guy goes to the store for whatever, he's got to buy a jug of milk, let's say, and somehow that player becomes infected. Then he drags it to the locker room. Now there's this going on. Now we're trying to trace it back to where it began. And now we're trying to figure out what we do with the rest of the team. I just don't know. To me, the closer we get, or the closer we think we get to all of this, I think the farther we are from the actual goal of this going, you know, being pulled off without some kind of kink in it. So I could be crazy. And I know it wasn't popular with the players to be secluded from their families for an extended period of time. But to me, and Kimby, you tell me I'm full of shit or crazy, it's fine too. But to me, that seemed like it made the most sense.
Yeah, the thing is, though, and here again, I'm not a doctor either, but I look at the most people that are sort of getting hit the worst with this thing, and you're older people and you got something going on. And they're saying they might not have something for another till the end of the year, or maybe into next year. It might be that long away, and you're shutting down a whole world here. And you're right. And I look because the thing that's really gone through my mind through this whole process, and I'm not being selfish by saying this, but I watched my daughter was graduating this year, and you know all the things get canceled, and I feel so bad for them. A lot of the age group weren't getting hit in this process, and I think you're going to have to tackle it. I really believe, because like I said earlier when I talked to you guys, I said that this
this goes on. People are losing their jobs, and people are living, and they're not, you know, it's a hard world out there. And people are, you know, not everybody's millionaires where they can go and just live off this thing without, with the world going dead for a year. You just can't do it. And, you know, if you're going to, you're going to go through a lot more serious problems than this, than not only this going on, which I think is a bad problem. I don't have an answer for it either, Ribs. I really don't. But I think it's creating a hell of a lot more problems out there by what it's doing. I do know that.
Well, you know, yeah. Ribs, let me ask you a question
real quick.
Chrome. Let me follow up on something both of you said, because I want to say something. So with all the leagues going through this, I think the thing, and Ribs, I thought you brought up a great point, because, you know, the players obviously have a say in this, right? As they should. And you talk about the safety portion of it in one breath, but then the seclusion and being away from your family and all that kind of stuff. I think at some juncture, that's the type of thing that could be worked out. But the safety portion of this is interesting to me, because how do you define that? Because, like, we heard on the baseball side, we heard Andrew Miller say, well, we want guarantees of safety. I don't think you can give that, like, judging by just what you said. I think you can take all these precautions. But all I've ever said about all the sports is, if you're going to come back, then come back knowing that some guys are going to get it. Like, don't come back anticipating, well, nobody's going to get it because of these precautions. I don't think it's realistic. Like, and that's an opinion. Like, what the hell do I know? But I just don't see any way, shape, or form that guys just don't get it eventually.
Well, here's where I go with it from here for all three of us, okay? And that's just three people right now, is we all independently have our own thoughts and opinions, concerns, and, you know, we don't know all the answers. And so, and that's kind of society right now, right? It doesn't matter what you personally believe. So if Kimby believes one thing, it doesn't mean that he's going to get four other people in a room that actually agree with him. And the same can be said about everybody right now. And I think that that's the biggest problem, is that no matter what TV station you turn it on, what you read, I feel like it's all just, nobody has the right answers or the proper answers. So based upon that, nobody's ever going to be guaranteed. To your point, Chrome, nobody's guaranteed that they're not going to be put at risk in anything, whether it's pro sports, if you're working at the gas station, if you're working in the coal mines, if you're doing radio or TV or whatever it is. As of right now, based upon what I know, there's no guarantee out there.
And I think what, you know, and from people that you listen to, Riz, and you're right, whatever channel you want to listen to, you're, and whatever station you're going to listen to, you're going to get a different story. But I have a firm belief, just like the flu is rolling through this world, and before this thing come, the flu has taken many lives of people. And I think this thing's here to stay. And I think you're going to have to deal with it for the rest of our lives while we're here. It's just, even if you find the vaccine, you're still going to have the process go through it, you know? And
yeah.
I think the biggest thing is, you're when you get out to, like, New York and the devastation that they've had there, and, you know, you get into a few of these cities, like Chicago's had it pretty bad and Detroit's had it pretty bad. And, you know, but because if you take away those numbers there, you know, it's not as bad as it would be on a real low percentile. And that, but New York's getting knocked like crazy right now. And which is, you know, you got to concern about it because people are traveling all over the place, you know, so it's going to. One of us three could be sitting here with it. We don't even know we've run into it, and it could have went through the process. Because I firmly believe when we were playing hockey last year, at a portion of the time, I had a couple kids on my team that were sicker than a dog, and the doctor could not tell them what was wrong with them. They had no symptoms. They could, when they were taken to tests and everything, they couldn't even walk up the stairs at their own home. I was talking to one of the parents, and I'm under the belief that this thing was here then, and went through that process, you know. So it could have ran through your hockey team, and some guys might have been sick, and some guys might have not have gotten nothing, like it's gone on in the world.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. I'll tell you that, because there's lots of people that I've talked to in the hockey world. Let's just keep it that way. In the hockey world, where somebody in their family, oh, they had that awful flu this winter. It helped. Even the St. Louis Blues had a couple of players that had the, like, you talk about Jake Allen this year. Remember when all of a sudden Jake Allen was sick and he couldn't play? Well, when you do the math and you look at the calendar, you're like, well, holy shit. That's kind of right in an area to where it could have been something like that. Colton Parayko had the flu. for a week to where he felt like hell. And now, was it the flu? Was it this, that? You just don't know, right? So I think to put a bow on this, guys, we don't fucking know. Yeah. We don't know what's going on with it. And this is the biggest obstacle that all pro sports are going to have, is that they can't guarantee anything. And they're all going to be worried about what's it going to look like if we have a big problem with this and an entire team or half a team gets infected. And what is the liability, not so much financially, but in the public eye, if somebody dies because of this, and not even a player, one of their family members who they're in contact with, something happens. I think all these pro sports are worried about being the first ones back to the table and then something wrong happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, the point is taken. I mean, none of us here are doctors. I mean, we all have opinions, right, wrong,
Dr.
or
Jellyfinger.
Dr. Jellyfinger. But, you know, again, all of our listeners have an opinion. I'm not here to tell anybody their opinion's right or wrong. I know this, though. We all miss it. I think if it was safe for them to come back, I think all of us at this point would take it any way we could get it. Host cities, minor league cities, if it was safer there. No fans in the building, quarantine player. Like, we as fans would take it any way we could get it. And you know, I remind people of this all the time. There's no way that in any of the sports, the players don't want to play. I mean, they want to play, you know. I did hear a good point brought up today that if you were to come back right now, some of those teams that have no shot at the playoffs, if you were to finish the season, that might be interesting. Can you guys, like, some people were asking about that today. I'll start with you, Kimby. If you were on a team that was in dead last, had no chance at a playoff, and they told you had to play those last eight games of the season, would that be a little tough, or would that be like, hey, look, man, I have pride and I have a job to do?
Well, I'll tell you what. This is because I think this is a hockey player's mindset, and I know it was back in my day, but if you're gonna go all in, I think the whole league's got to go all in and bring everyone to the table. And because if you don't bring everyone to the table, you're gonna have the ones, and if something does go wrong, like you could say, you would have that's when you create a big problem, because you were forcing some to come back and you didn't force the others to come back. Now, when I'm looking at it here too, I'm thinking, when I'm looking at it from afar, thinking of the NHL, I'm going, if I can get these guys back, and if I can bring the shortest amount of players, not players, shortest amount of teams back in, I'm not worried about the regular season. I said, I don't care. I know you're going to piss some people off, but I'd like to bring back the top two in each bracket or something like that, get a playoff going, get through the process. Hopefully we can make it through without anyone, you know, without a big catastrophe going on there, and get through and get the Stanley Cup awarded to whoever would win it at the end. But try to get as fewest teams into the game as possible, and sort of try to keep the league going in that, so you don't have that asterisk going by it. That's the way I would try to get through it. Now, I know you're not going to make people happy, but that's where I would try to go with it.
I agree, Kimby. I agree. I really do. I think that if they just would just throw away the rest of the regular season, then you end up with a smaller amount of teams that are implicated in actually coming back to play. And then that's where I strongly believe my thoughts of a hub city or a hub area for your playoff team, then you go with maybe two separate areas, and then you end up in one separate area to where those teams play for the Stanley Cup. And so that, to me, that would be the best way to get it done. And it's kind of a bit of a dry run at the same time, to where, you know, you get a little bit of an idea of how things could work moving forward, and by the time you come back for your next season or your training camp, there's been more time in between this, and every day I'm sure they're finding out new things about what's going on or how to handle situations. So I don't know. I agree with you, Kimby. I think the fewer teams, the better, and then try to develop a system from there.
And I think too, when you're looking at it, I think hockey and basketball can sort of, I don't even really classify it as a guinea pig, because if you run in there and get it done, and, you know, you don't put no fans in there, but people can start watching this on TV. You know, you got to obviously get the TV people in there, so it sort of gets back to a little normalcy in this world, where people can sort of sit at home and watch it on, because a lot of people would take that right now, because, you know, instead of watching the boob tube and you're not really getting what you want, you know, people are going stir crazy in their house, but it would give them something to watch. And I think the biggest one that's going to have the biggest problem with it is going to be baseball, because they're just getting ready to start their season. We know how long that season goes. You know, you're playing 162 games. They do usually, but I know they probably have to narrow it down. But they're the ones that would be in the have a tougher time getting into this ball game than I think the other three, because, you know, football's going to see what goes on. They're going to be able to come around and react to whatever the hockey and basketball has done and baseball. So they're in a better spot to judge what they can get to. And maybe there's something comes by, like a vaccine that can take care of it. But, you know, I think hockey and basketball could get in there and just give some life back to this country, because everyone's sort of, you know, sitting in this house, you go stir crazy, man.
Yeah, well, look, the contact sports, they're going to have the biggest obstacle with all this. And I don't know how they're going to perfect it, that's for sure. But I want to run a few things by you guys.
If it's that thing I saw, Ribs, don't even, I puked when I saw that.
Okay, well then, perfect. That's what we're going to go over, because I'd like to hear you puke.
No puking.
It might be good for rating. So, so I saw this thing yesterday, and I talked about it on the show today. And here are some of the ideas that have been floated about. So let me go through them, and then you guys, Kimby, we'll start with you after I'm done. You guys can take your turns commenting on. Okay?
Hey, so Kimby, these are the ideas he said have been getting worse as it goes, so this ought to be good.
Yeah, 100%. So, and then Bill Daly actually has a comment about it, which is even better. Okay?
I get a kick out of the one, which I'll respond to. Just go through it, and I'll give you the one I start laughing at.
Okay, so the first one, it would be full face shield in order to reduce the spread of droplets amongst the players. Second one would be no fighting allowed, which
they've already done. So they're good.
That's not really that big of a hurdle for them. Yeah, so, no. And then the next one, no scrums after whistles, so the linesmen don't have to break up anything. The next one, which I would love to see this one, because I think Chief would be amazing.
This is the one right here.
Would have to be socially distanced and wearing a face mask on the bench, which that would be kind of entertaining. Now, the next one, wingers would have to maintain 2 feet of distance on faceoffs instead of the traditional crossing of the sticks or leaning into each other's space, which I think that's ridiculous. What's the difference? Centermen still have to take the goddamn draw. And then the last one was no spitting on the ice or on the bench. All right, boys. I'm open to comments at this point.
No lubrication on the ice. That's terrible. but, you know, I when this first came out, and I'd been called back to work, and I was sitting at work, and I got a guy that he thinks he knows everything about the hockey world, and I was sitting there laughing, and I go, he was reading these to me on this thing, and I go, I wonder if I could ever see Chief wearing a mask in his life. I'm trying to think back to when we were playing in the Western Hockey League and if he had to wear a visor at all, but I think he might have been gone by then. But I said I could just see him back there with one of those full face masks on there with a suit on it.
Like Buck Rogers.
Trying to fit through the glass. Oh, my God. Listen.
I mean, why don't they just put at the bottom, no having of any type of fun?
Well, think about this, right? Like, every inch of the ice is a puck battle, okay? And how are you going to, like, if these are some of the starting points that they're talking about right now, do you think it's even worth playing if this is what they're trying to do?
No. You know and to be honest with you too, and I know the game has changed big time, Riz, but you know as well as I know, because we watched it here in St. Louis last year, but the Blues, when they went and won the Stanley Cup, there was 4 lines of in-your-face hockey coming at you for 60 minutes. And hockey, you know, even as much as they've taken away a lot of the stuff, but there's still an intimidation factor in the ball game. And if you're going to go out and try to play a game with none of that going on and pretty well everyone patting each other on the ass, you're going to lose fans before you're going to have them enjoying it, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, can you imagine, like, the next set of ideas is they're going, what are they going to try and include? No body checking anymore, because there's the threat of some guys spit traveling after you knock the snot out of them. Like, I guess this is how you get to solutions, is by floating ideas out there. But
you know what, I wouldn't want that, Ribs, because I when I golf in the in the summer and that, and talk to guys, and you're having a few beer with them and talking, and they're asking you questions. I will always tell anyone out there that the Stanley Cup is the hardest trophy to win. And I've always said that, and I never won it. So I'm not going off that, by talking to people and watching what the process and how you, for 2 months or 2.5 months or whatever you got to go through. And St. Louis fans will know it the most, because they pretty well went game sevens all of the way time last year. And it's just, I believe it's the hardest trophy to win. So I wouldn't want them to come back and go through a mediocre type of process. That would do nothing for the game.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's got to be, done the right way. For yeah. Sure.
Well, you know, I said earlier that I thought fans would welcome it back no matter what you did. I'm not quite sure some of those things would fly very well. But, you know, and the thing I don't understand is, if they're going to test them all the time, then why can't they just go out and play? Like, I mean, I guess if one sneaks by, like, I don't know. Like,
if they come out with those rules, Chromes, then you could probably put your skates on and try out, because you put your tutu on and you'd have a shot at them.
Well, that wouldn't have been the problem. It would have been keeping up, probably. It might have been a bit of an issue. But listen, I would say this. You know, you guys played the game at a really high level. You knew what it took to play it at that level. I can't even imagine going to a guy like either one of you and saying, okay, I want you to take everything you've done your whole life to get to this moment. And now what I want you to do is, I want you to not do this and not do that and not that, and then have you go out and play. Like, that's almost impossible to me.
Yeah, it would be silliness to try and make some of these modifications. And it's just silliness. But I guess if they're coming up with ideas, I mean, at least they're talking about it.
I will tell you what, if I was where I sat, if I was playing the game right now and we're in the playoffs, and, you know, I didn't play much in the playoffs when they got around. I was a fourth liner, so I didn't play much at all. But if I was given the option and they said, we're going to test you when you're walking into the rink, and if you pass the test, you're good to play, I'd be all in. I'm just telling you that right now. That's the way I would rule. And,
well, I think the players feel that way too. I mean, the problem is, and this is where I don't want to dive into fucking politics or anything right now to do with the world. Trust me, that's a good way to get murdered these days. But I don't know if there's that kind of testing available for these guys to every time they come in the rink to get tested. And then, you know, then you'd run into the public opinion of, well, why the hell do all these guys get the ability to be tested on a daily basis? And, you know, my grandmother can't be tested. And, you know, I just think that right now it's a wish. You'd love to see it. I just don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
Well,
I hear you.
We're going to see something one way or the other. But as you guys can both imagine, I think fans were really excited today when I sent out that you guys were going to be on. So I'd like to offered them to be able to send some stuff in to hear you guys talk a little bit and have some fun. Obviously, we can gloom and doom all day long about where we're at with this, but I think some fans want to hear from you guys, maybe dive into a few of their topics or stories. So we're going to do that. I'm pulling that stuff up. And while I do, I'll remind you guys to check us out at bluesnhlpodcast.com. We're going to ask you to please click subscribe to the podcast. Find us on Twitter at STL Blues Podcast. Follow us there. On Facebook, type in Blues NHL Podcast. Follow us there, please. Instagram, Blues NHL Podcast Show, also at lineupmediagroup.fm, home of your radio. Want to send a special shout out to some of those businesses that are privately owned, of people that we do know and care about that have been with us for a long time. NelsonLandServices.com, obviously the 5-star locally rated company with reasonable prices. You know, I'm sure they're still getting after it a little bit, especially over in that Missouri area where, you know, thank goodness it's starting to open a little bit over there. But we'd like you to give them a call. It's the only name you need to know in landscaping, 573-216-0629. That's NelsonLandServices.com. Jamie, before we go any further, I mentioned earlier that SynergyHockeySkills.com. I'm not sure what's going on there, but I'm sure there's a lot of people wondering, do you have any idea what's going on? Like, have you guys started back up? Do you have a plan? What's happening there?
Yeah, actually, right before I jumped on with you guys, I had an hour-long conference call with a bunch of people trying to get to a solution of what might be possible. And as of right now, our summer camps and our small group training is going to be a go. We were able to design a method of doing it and a handbook to go along with it that everybody approved. And so we will be limiting the camps to 36 kids, maximum capacity. and our lessons would be 12 kids maximum. Those kids would obviously be all split up and respecting the social distancing and all that, and the maximum amount of kids on the ice. But as of right now, Crowns, we are a go for our summer programming. And you can go to synergyhockeyskills.com, click on summer camps or the SPT training, small group training, and sign up. And we're answering any and every question that we have answers to try and make sure that people feel good about what they're doing.
Well, that's good to hear that you're getting back up and running. Our good friends at Adam's Smokehouse just got back up and running. You guys can check them out over on Watson Road. They're doing curbside orders. They're taking pre-orders as well, because at this time of year, I mean, with the way this is, they're running out every day. So they're trying to get pre-orders so that they have an idea how much to make. You guys can check them out. Adam's Smokehouse, it's the best barbecue in St. Louis, folks. We're really proud of all of our listeners. You guys have been just killing them. I mean, just absolutely lines out the on the lined up on the sidewalk there with your cars and just filling it out and taking everything they got. So thank you for doing that. It means a lot to us that you show those guys the love and respect. And that's Adam Smokehouse, St. Louis. Here's your cue. And of course, if we're going to take some questions, let's hit the Patterson Tire and Service text line. Remember, they're a whole lot more than a tire store. Give them a call, 618-797-6711, located at 3718 Highway 111 in Granite City, Illinois. Kimby, I mean, I know you for sure. Our friend Brian over there has ran his own campaign to get the gyms open in Illinois. I don't think he's doing very well, though. He's just lifting tires, I think. He's just lifting tires.
I got my own kid flipping tires, so that's what I had to actually go over to the Patterson Tire, and they gave me a big tire so I could get my kid outside and get him off the video game and say, "Here, start flipping that, you little bugger."
They probably would have put him to work for cheap labor, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, we'll stay away from there right for now. But I like those places. I tell my kid, he said, "You know, you want to go to the real world?" I said, "There it is, right for you. So let's get going." Motivation.
Well, those guys are in there taking care of their customers. They do a great job. There's definitely great pricing and quantity. They do a ton of business. They've been in the community for over 40 years. And we're going to ask you to give Patterson Tire and Service an opportunity. That's 618-797-6711. Okay, guys, we got some good stuff here that you guys can have some fun with. Kimby, we'll start with you. What was the toughest city to play in? Let's start in the minors. So was there a town when you went to, you knew it was going to be a rough night?
A couple players, but I'll put, when I had to go into Rochester, we went in there and we had to take an elevator up to the, from the bottom up to the top. And we had a big old brawl going on when that was going on. And some of the guys got stuck in the elevator. But that was just those old rinks that you played back in the day that you ran up there on the East Coast. You'd go pulling up there and it looked like the State Fair rinks, you know. Then it just, they had an eerie feeling to them, so you didn't know what the hell you were walking into. But that one sort of sticks out in my mind.
Rivs, how about you?
Yeah, well, in the minors, Kimby, it must have been a trend, I guess, in Rochester, because we we had a game there one night and there was a brawl that started a warm-up. I wouldn't say a brawl. You could only get about six or seven guys in the elevator to get up there. And unfortunately, I happened to be one of the first guys up in the elevator. We're out on the ice, and they had a couple of ding-dongs start shooting pucks at us. And so, you know, we start going at it, and then we got guys that are fucking slow on the elevator. We got a couple of guys trying to run up the steps in their skates. And, yeah, we had a bit of a brawl. But we were shorthanded for most of it, god damn it. And we had a couple of guys who were so fucking scared that, they said they couldn't get, the elevator wasn't fast enough.
Yeah. They pulled the alarm, didn't they?
Somehow they hit the stop button.
Let's not get too far away from this. I mean, what kind of rink has an elevator that takes you up to the ice level? Like, what is going on in these places?
I don't know, but it was strange, that's for sure.
You could take a step. There were steps probably, I don't know, maybe four levels of them. Ribs, was there or something? You had to go around the corner a few times.
Couldn't wear your skates.
No, but your skates, your skates. So that wasn't the thing. So it would be like a three-session elevator deal. So people would go on and go up, and we sent a guy on our elevator up the first time, and the whole crew, the boys that knew how to do the job when they got up there, they come up in the second onslaught. So the game changed, the brawl changed a little bit when we all arrived, though. I know you know that.
Yeah, well, then there's also another place, too, Crumbs, when, and I think you must have played here too, Kimby, was the old Adirondack.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
The shitter was right in the middle of the room.
And it didn't even have walls around it. Like, it had like this one little divider, but half the room could see you plain as day having a dump. And so I remember between periods one time, and our boy Jimmy Roberts was our coach in the minors, and he comes in and he's talking to everybody, and then he walks around, and then he sees Paul Broughton, who was down in the minors. He's having a dump in the intermission, and Jimmy's having to focus on telling us about the game, and Paul's sitting there farting and shitting at the same time as half the locker room watching him.
Jeez Louise. Can you top that one, Kimby?
No, I can't. But no, to stay on, though, so you went, that was the minors, but I tell you what, when you go to the NHL, there was no rink like the Chicago Stadium, and I'll argue that with any, because I sat, and not very often, and I think the only reason I guess I was on the starting, our whole team was on the damn blue line, so we were there when Bobby Hall and they were bringing their numbers down in Chicago, but I was out there, and my knees were shaking when that place got rocking, when the national anthem was going in that, and you'd play in that old barn, you'd walk up the steps to the ice surface, and the glass would, you know, people would, it was such a small surface that it was a rough game. You were going into a rough game, and you better be ready to play. It was like back in Rome, back going into the dome. You know, hey, we're coming in, and only one's coming out, and that's how it felt back then. But it was the best arena that I've ever played hockey in. But I'll tell you what, there were some times you'd be shaking out there.
Yeah, I agree. And I told the story on air last week, was my first game ever in Chicago Stadium. You don't realize, one, how steep those stairs are to get up to the ice, and two, how skinny they are. They're not wide. So you almost have to turn your feet sideways to get up the stairs properly. Well, I'm flying around at warm up and thinking I'm hot shit. I think I'm like 19 years old, you know, and probably looking at myself in the glass, seeing if I look good and whatnot. And I go to come off the ice, and the doorway was behind the net. And so I go to come off the ice, and my very first step to go down, a fan froze. It felt like an entire pitcher of beer, but I think it was just a cup of beer in my face, like on top of like my head and face. And then I go to take the next step, and I slide down right to the fucking bottom, riding it on my ass. And then, of course, from there, people just start throwing everything they could find down the stairs at me. And it was my welcome to the show moment, as I'm trying to get the smell of beer out of my jersey and all the shit and grime and dirt that was all over the stairs and floor. And
How bad of a setup is that, though? So you're sitting there. So warm-up goes on, and you go through the process, and I was one of those guys that there's about 5 minutes left in warm-up, I just got the hell off the ice. I wasn't going to sit around and wait for, because I was the last guy getting the puck to take a shot on the goalie, so I wasn't hanging around for that. So, but there's no way you're getting out that door, because they're throwing the puck back, and shots are coming, and I'm going, how the hell do you get out of here now? It was not even fair.
But that was the problem. That's exactly what happened to me. As I went to leave, was probably 2.5 minutes left in the warm-up, something like that. And so the moment I'm scrambling quickly, you kind of give the guy the nod on the door, right? Like, hey, get ready on the door. And they're used to it. And then I'm skating by, and I'm kind of trying to time it between guys shooting. And so you're ducking out of there pretty quickly. But you got to remember, you're ducking out of there straight down a flight of stairs. And so this guy threw a beer at me at the same time. And that's how all hell broke loose. I end up on my ass down in the bottom of the second steps.
Jeez Louise. Here's a good one for you guys. I know, Kimmy, everybody always asks you who the toughest guy or meanest guy you ever fought in the NHL was. I would say the minors were littered with guys that were meaner than a snake, but who are some of the meanest guys you guys ever played against that never made it to the NHL?
There was one brother made it, but Serge Roberge was a pretty tough customer down in the minors. He'd be one of the all-time top dogs that ever ran the circuit down there. There's another guy, Jacques Mayotte. He was down there. He's a pretty tough dude. Went through the process. But you're right. They had guys that, I don't know the word. They might have got a little sniff of the NHL, but they could just, the game wasn't there to stay up there for whatever reason. But, you know, I've always, there was a few crazy ones in the minors that would do stupid stuff and just for notoriety, you know, but Serge Roberge is probably one of the toughest guys. In the NHL, though, I'll always say that, and I've always said this, and like when Bob Probert was in Detroit, he was just on a roll, and he was tough as nails then. But and Twister obviously goes into that category too. He was going there, and you fight him enough, and you think you're friends with him, but he's going there to take your head off. And but that was good though. That you had to be ready for that nonsense, and so it was not nonsense, but you had to be ready for it. And yeah, there was guys like Dave Brown was no Dave Brown wouldn't let, he didn't give you the chance to get your gloves off when those left hands were coming at you. There's some scary shit, guys, that when they wanted to get going, look out.
How about you, Rev? Yeah. You ever play against somebody in the minors that was a mean dude that never made it, that you're like, man, that guy was an animal?
Well, to Kimby's point, right, it's the guys who were that crazy and that tough and that mean, they ended up with at least a cup of coffee in the NHL. You know, like they got a few games here, a few games there. The perennial minor leaguer guys that were probably right off their rocker, they were down further, like not the American League or the IHL. They'd be like in the East Coast or the Western Pro League where, you know, they had a lot of those guys. So, you know, for me, you know, like Frank Vialois was a tough guy in the American League, but, you know, he couldn't hack it in the NHL. He got his face punched in a number of times. But yeah, all the guys that were crazy down there, at some point, at least the guys I know, got a shot in the NHL to at least see if that would carry over. So, I don't know. The minors, I was never really worried too much, because the big guys took care of themselves. And, you know, you'd have the middleweights that were always my biggest concern. And that translated to the NHL for me. It was like, yeah, Proby was a scary man. But at the end of the day, I always had Twister on the bench for those days when Proby was around. And, well, I had Twister for a large part of it. I always had somebody that was around on my team to handle the big heavyweights, because I wasn't going to fight those guys. That's just pointless. I didn't feel like getting my face punched in, for starters. And, you know, those other guys had jobs to do. So, yeah, I'd go start a lot of fights and keep business good for the tough guys. But Ty Domi, for me, was my nemesis in the NHL. And obviously he was a tough guy, but he was smaller, right? And he could skate. And he'd run around like an idiot and try to take your head off. And then Ty and I got into it one time in preseason. He was in Toronto. I was in Ottawa. And held my own okay, but he was hard to handle. He was a strong guy. And the way he fought, he spun you around and did all sorts of weird shit. But I hated playing against him because he fell into my weight class as far as just his physical stature, not how tough he was, because he was way tougher than me. But he fell into my weight category that way. And then he ran around every fucking shift like a madman trying to kill everybody in sight. And so he was a guy that I didn't like playing against. And another guy too that comes to mind now, minor league guys, that kind of was the famous Ty, and Kimby, you may have played this guy or fought him, was a guy named Andy Bezo. Yeah. And this guy ran around, he was only what, 5'10", 5'11", and he ran around and tried to murder everybody on the ice, and he would fight anybody at the drop of a dime. But he was that guy that, you know, he was small enough physically that he could come after guys like me. But then he's in a whole other category because he was fucking, that guy was right snapped out of his head. He was tough as nails, and, you know, he wasn't afraid to take a beating either.
You know, just real quick, though, there was a, you know, when you get to craziness, though, Chrome, like Link Gates was a guy that you probably played against that, and I knew, I got to meet Link, but, and I you know, he's a good guy, but you didn't know what the fucking guy was going to do.
Yeah.
And then the other guy, and he's a good friend of mine, but he passed away a couple years ago. But Greg Smith, we call him Bird Dog. He used to live with me. But Bird Dog was he would fight anybody that you could. But and I'll tell you a real quick story. I got sent down to the minors in Halifax my first year, and Bird Dog was down there playing. And this is a guy that would stick you in the head or punt or cross check you in the head, and he wouldn't care one rat's ass if he got suspended or no, he didn't care. Did not care. And I can remember after the game that we were in Halifax, and we went over to this place called My Apartment. And it was like a bar, but it had like five bars in one. And so you can just walk through it in there. So I get over there, Bird Dog, we played an exhibition game I had played. We come over there, Bird Dog didn't play that night. So I meet him over at my apartment because we were living together. And I had no idea what Bird Dog was. Him and Max Middendorf, these were these two tall guys. I
oh, God.
And it was just, it was sort of a shit show going on, but I walk in and Bird Dog's sitting there and he's drinking Caesars, and I guess he was trying to put an impression on me or something. I look over and he drank his Caesar, and he turned around and he bit the glass and chewed the glass and swallowed it. And I said, "Now what the hell is that all about?" I go, "You want intimidation?" I go, "There you go, intimidation or just stupid." I couldn't figure it out.
Oh boy!
You know what, Kimby? That it must be something to do because Bird Dog is from Newfoundland, I believe.
Well, he went to Newfoundland. He's from Ontario originally, but he did end up in Newfoundland. You're right.
Yeah, I was going to talk about East Coast guys. Meaning Eastern Canada, maritime guys, Chrome. There was this one guy played with me in junior. His name was Bob McIsaac. And super quiet guy, wore glasses, like was really good student. But then the moment you put him on the ice or the moment you added alcohol to this guy's life, everything fucking changed. Like, he got loaded at the bar and he'd do the same goddamn thing. He'd take a beer bottle and he'd smash it on his own head and then eat the glass that was left over and stare people down. And it's like, holy shit, what am I dealing with here? If this guy's not afraid to kill himself, then what the hell's the point, you know?
Jiminy Christmas.
There's some funny shit.
No, it's you guys have lived a life that, you know, people, well, I always say this, that people wanted to live, like, people think they want to live that life, right, until you're knee-deep in it sometimes. But, you know,
I get the therapy bill.
You talk a lot about, we talk a lot about first, right? Like, you know, a lot of people always ask you guys, I know, about your first game, first NHL goal thing, first fight, whatever. What about the first, let's leave with this one. What, both you guys, your story on your first pro game, I guess, would it be the first game after you signed a contract with a pro clubs, like in the minors, your first minor league game?
Oh my God. Okay. Well, I was lucky. I played in the NHL before I played in the AHL, which it was short. It was fucking short-lived. I played one game and I got sent down. Must have been a bad game. But my first game in the minors, no lie, we were playing, it was in Worcester, and we were playing against the Hershey Bears. And I was sent down and I was a little sideways over it. You know, you're that young, you don't think you should be sent down. And I think it was probably the first time I'd ever been cut, per se, from a team, and had a bit of an attitude about it. So I went into that game a little grumpy, and Jimmy Roberts is our coach down there, and he's a hell of a guy. He has a great way of making you feel better about things. But we go out in the first period, and one of their players, I think it was their captain, his name was Sean McCosh, and he was a pretty tough guy. He hit me in the first period. And then I chased him up the ice and cross-checked him in the back of the head. And when he was down, I just decided, well, he's already down. I might as well beat the shit out of him, right? Like, not a very fair move, but I didn't really care at the time. And so then all hell broke loose on the ice. And we got a bit of a five-on-five going. And I get into the penalty box to get it all sorted out. And as McCosh is going by, he's obviously not very happy with me at this moment. And so he's eyeballing me, and the door's open, and I'm chirping him back and whatnot, and he just comes into my penalty box. Skates full head of steam straight into the penalty box to fight. And I'm like, here we go. Now, they got a little old guy that's working in the penalty box, and he's trying to break us up, and he can't do it. Other players now at the same time come flying into the penalty box. I shit you not, guys. We have 10 hockey players in one penalty box going at it. There was no room to even breathe, let alone actually hurt somebody. It got so bad and the referees couldn't break it up and nobody wanted to leave because everybody's like, no, fuck this, I'm not leaving. Well, the cops come down from the runway up top and they lift the glass out from the back of the penalty box. And the first thing they do is save the old man who's trapped in there, who had no part in it. And then they start trying to help break guys up. But that was my first American Hockey League game. And at that point, I thought to myself, oh, boy, this is going to be one hell of a shit show down here.
I can't believe you remembered that. I just, how about you, Kimby?
I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's what I mean. How about you, Kimby?
My first NHL game, I'll just go to there, was, I could have been about $10 million a year player because I come out and I fought twice and I had a goal. So But leading up to it, was we went through. I was down in Halifax again. We just got through New Year's. We played a game. We went up to this place called the Palace. It was a I'm down the minor. We won the game. We had a pretty good team down there. We won the game. We go up to the Palace, and this is like a, you know, it's open till 4 in the morning, and nothing really good happens after probably 12 o'clock at midnight. So the story goes again. We're sitting in there, and we're getting a little bit of an altercation. We get ready to step outside and have a little go around in the with a guy, and my buddy Bird Dog comes flying out the door, and Bird Dog goes, so we get a little melee going on the street, and no shit, you know, so we're getting a little bit of a brawl, and get home, and I'm going, oh, you know, we're going to be in shit tomorrow. I go down to the rink, and me and Kenny McRae, who's an Ontario boy also, that I was living with him. When he went up to the NHL, I lived with him for a while. But Kenny McRae and me get called up to the NHL the day after we had a brawl. And so that was sort of the story. You know, maybe we get in a lot more brawls to get called up there. But I've had my best game of my career. Two fights in a – I scored on a breakaway on Sean Burkin's jersey.
Oh, my Lord.
Thanks for playing.
Well,
that's amazing.
Well, I want to thank some people. Ash_GibbsSBlues, big fan, and Northern Ontario proud fan of the Blues.
Yep.
Calls himself a power play specialist in the Beer Hockey League. I want to send a shout out to our friend Deneen. You guys know Deneen. She's one of our biggest fans. She just, you know.
The first one you said who did you say the first one was?
Ash Gibbs.
Yeah, that's what, you know what? That he's famous in St. Louis because he's the guy that, when they're playing in Winnipeg, he goes into Winnipeg, and when Winnipeg score, or when the Blues score that, they come back on that thing, and they get up against the glass. I think Schwartz scores the goal, and they go up against the glass, and you look into the crowd, and he's the one standing up with the Blues jersey on.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yes. Just,
it's a whiteout in Winnipeg, and he's the only guy standing there with the dark blue jersey on with his arms out to the side. Like, it's a great picture.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some great questions that came in. So on the next, you know, that we've got plenty for another episode of this to get us through until we can figure out what's going on. But I want to thank both of you guys for taking some time today. I know the fans have been asking for it, and you guys delivered. So we really do appreciate it. And hope both of you guys, your families are safe while you're going through this. And all of our fans out there, we hope you guys are doing what you got to do to stay safe right now. And won't be long. Hopefully we'll be back to Blues Hockey, but we want to thank you for tuning in to BluesNHLPodcast.com. Don't forget us on Twitter at STL Blues Podcast, Blues NHL Podcast on Facebook, Blues NHL Podcast Show on Instagram. Don't forget, we come to you from the SynergyHockeySkills.com studio. Special thanks, as always, goes out to our friends at Adam's Smokehouse, the best barbecue in St. Louis, folks. You won't be disappointed. Give them an opportunity for your business. To our friends, the Nelson family, the only name in landscaping you need to know is NelsonLandServices.com. Call them 573-216-0629. And, of course, our great friends at Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store, 618-797-6711. For both of them boys, I can tell you, we would love to say let's go Blues, but how about let's just go hockey? So let's go hockey!